Well, hello to you, Scott Baker. Normally
Mike
I'd say
Yames?
good afternoon, but
Yeah.
it's going out afternoon, but we're recording this early. I just feel the
At
need to just be
an
honest about
off
that.
time. You want to be very clear about that. And the but everybody else watching now or listening later, Lead Better. We get these out 7 days a week and haven't missed one and since we started about, I don't know, 75, 80 days ago. So that's a good run.
Today is our 88th conversation
Oh,
doing it
wow.
in this way after a year and a half worth of doing it
Just on X. Yeah,
just on
right.
X, right?
Yeah.
And so.
And for those just catching up with all of it, the field notes were starting 4 years ago plus, right? And actually, you know what, Mikey, let's pat ourselves on the back. I think that our organization probably thought it was a little bit insane to suggest that we do a daily email on Substack about leadership. And so we had to kind of make that a little bit more plausible than just like, maybe we'll try this. We had to create a vision. Like we pointed to other examples. We kind of said, it could be that this is a way for us to do this. And now we have readers in 181 countries around the world. And so the question is, the field note of the day is vividly visualize accomplishments the team is far away from attaining. And in our own team, just on the project that I just happened to bring up, we actually talked about the idea that maybe what would it look like when we had 50,000, 75,000, 100,000 subscribers? And we keep passing these marks, and you're like, but we did visualize them. So do you think that that actually helped?
I think it helps.
That's not a resounding endorsement
Well,
of my ability to.
I'm trying to think of what would cause us to like maybe call it quits anyway, right? I don't know if that's the thing. Like, I don't know that visualization was something that I knew that we were doing consciously when we talked about it. And maybe that's the best way to
Well,
do
there
it.
was a little bit of a comparison in the sense that, like, we were thinking about doing something that was really great content, but free, right? And we did have an example because we've had a long alliance with Ryan Holiday and the team at the Daily Stoic, and we had actually had Ryan come up and spend some time. This is 6 years ago. The Daily Stoic may have, I think it had only been going for a year maybe,
Right,
and
but
so
at the
there was
time he
this.
was also writing the Daily Dad as well. And so he
Correct.
had two of
Yeah.
these things,
So
right?
we were saying, well, here's a thing, and it works over here. What if we did the same thing for leadership? What would that look like for again, an organization where even the idea of having an admiredleadership.com was an unusual thing? The organization was used to being very secretive for decades. And so all of this, you had to kind of create a vision. But most people don't care about this. Let's get to the, I was just
Well,
happened to use that as an
let's
example.
talk about visualization. Do you remember the first time that I remember as a 10-year-old, the first time I saw, and it was Bill Johnson, alpine skier for the 84 Olympic team. And I remember the camera being trained on him when he was about to do his downhill run. And he was sitting there on the top of the hill, and he had his eyes closed, and he was doing this as he was. And they explained to a 10-year-old and the rest of the viewing audience that he's actually visualizing his course heading downhill. And in the even less scientific back then way of talking about it was kind of this revolutionary thing that an athlete would actually go through the visualization of the actual course that he's going through. It may have been something that lots of people do, but actually practicing going through the visualization and seeing it on camera, that was the first time that I had ever seen that before. F1 drivers might accidentally do it because of the way that like the track gets in their head, and so they dream about it, and so the visualization automatically takes place. That's a little bit like that's the first time I'd actually heard of it, but that's even a little bit different than the idea of like, do you visualize all the way to standing on the winner's podium and not just on the track, right? That's a
Well,
different thing, but it's cool to take advantage of that.
yeah, and specifically to this field note, and then I'll get, share a few little of the things that I encountered because I was a lot older in 1984 than you were. But the idea here that the field note is underlining is that visualization is way more than just positive thinking. And the idea that it's just like, oh, I have this goal, I have this dream. It's not just that. There's more to it than that. And you see even in the headline that the idea that a leader would come in to help visualize, vividly visualize, not the accomplishments for the coming quarter, because you are going to do that too, but what's something that is pretty far away? What's the thing that has, it's kind of so audacious that you didn't even quite have, it almost seems silly to talk about it, right? So you have to kind of underline it. And I actually think that part of the magic of the field note is that it builds out the processes that we now know that we didn't even know 30 or 40 years ago, because there is a lot of research around the idea that just having kind of like, oh, I'm going to believe it and visualize it, I can see it and it's going to happen, that that's actually discouraging if it's not accompanied by following the steps and processes. So it's almost more about vividly visualizing the process on the way to the goal that is actually even more empowering than just visualizing the goal. And I like that the field note underlines that.
Right. So visualizing the process for an organizational leader is something that maybe it happens in a pre-mortem kind of a way. Mm-hmm. We've got a conference coming up. So we have the tendency to kind of go through this, like, what are all the things that could go wrong? And what are our plans if they go wrong, right? But we don't have the tendency to say, how do we respond when this thing goes fantastic, right?
Right.
There is no podium necessarily for us to stand up on top of, but it's a different approach that a lot of people don't think through how to do it. And so I really love the illustration. If you don't mind, I'll bring this up to stage and let Jim Valvano, coach of NC State, kind of speak for himself here.
And this is in the field note. Yeah.
Yes.
Was a big dreamer. From day one, when he stepped foot in this building, he used to have us all in a circle, telling us his goal was to win the national championship. From day one.
He starts talking about this dream of his. I know I'm going to win a national champ. Who says that? Who says that on their first introduction to their players? I know I'm going to win a national championship. But the more he spoke, the more we set up, the more we listened, he painted a picture for us. He said, if I can get you to see what I'm seeing, to dream what I'm dreaming, we can get there. We can win it. This can be the team.
My goal, what I want to do each year, is to win a national championship. I want to cut the nets down. We have one practice every year where they come up on a court. There's no balls. There's no drills. All we do is practice cutting the net down. It's true. Well, I have a scissor. I have a gold scissor. We carry each other up. We cut the net. They put me up. I cut the last one. We do that.
We was acting like, yeah, we just won. Everybody's cutting down the nets and everything. But it was a serious deal.
I can tell you the first time was awkward and probably the second time, but when you practice something often, then you start to get into it.
That's my dream, cutting the nets down.
So
fantastic.
Yeah, interesting though, the notion of it's awkward when you practice it is probably a key thing there for us to talk about here, right?
Yeah, very much. Like, and by the way, the year they won was 1983, a year before the skier that you were watching. And of course, Valvano died at a very young age, about a decade later. But that I remember hearing about that, you know, back at the time. And I think that the part of the key there and the thing that you just underlined, you know, I kind of grew up in that era. You know, I was in 83. I was probably 19 years old. There was this whole raft of literature, of positive thinking literature, and Tony Robbins was just getting started. And the prior generation, you had, you know, these books by, you know, Napoleon Hill and W. Clement Stone and Zig Ziglar. And it was all like, you know, you could do this. And the thing that I remember at the time, and I was paying attention to this stuff, and I'm like, man, maybe I could get, you know, some of this to catch on to me. But you didn't realize, and I remember actually meeting W. Clement Stone and meeting Zig Ziglar at different events that I was involved in. And they had such this enthusiasm and contagiousness. But I couldn't tell if it could spread to other people. Like, you know, like, was there an actual process? It couldn't just be as magical as just being like, well, let me just think about it. So yeah. I've studied this myself in addition to being around admired leadership. And so a lot of this, the thing that brings that to life, and we now know with research and even just, you know, work in the laboratories, that the more that you bring to the detail around the process, and as you said, there's a bit of a premortem. What's going to happen when this happens? What are you going to do when this goes wrong? When you have those things built into it, now you've got something that's real musculature. It's not just a fantasy.
Right. And it is a weird thing. It is an awkward thing that you're going to introduce to your team because nobody really does this. And so getting past that awkwardness is kind of a different thing. It's interesting, as I was looking up this clip, I noticed that the person who kind of pioneered this tradition of cutting the nets down was a coach by the name of Everett Case. And Everett Case was the coach that preceded Valvano at NC State.
How about that?
And Everett Case had done it for years in Indiana basketball when he was a high school coach. So the only reason that this tradition kind of got itself moving was because this weirdo who did it in high school brought it to the college level. And then Jim Valvano, who knew that Everett Case did it, was the one who's like, we're going to do it ahead of time.
Yeah.
We're going to do it ahead of time. Right. But it almost takes a guy like Valvano to see a guy who's championing this unique celebration and say, I want to do that so badly, we're going to practice it, right? And it's interesting, even in this video, that one of his players, as was highlighted there, is like him coming in and saying, I want you to picture with me. Even before we get to the ritual of practicing cutting these things down, he's already vividly painting the picture for his teammates. I want you to see what it's like to win a national championship with me,
right? Well, you know, one of the things you've heard me mention in the past, but I think it ties right to this and right to the field note, is I've liked the image that David Cook adds to this, which is, can you envision also 20 minutes before the trophy moment?
Right.
20 minutes before the victory is sealed, because that moment is a moment of chaos. You can also visualize the steps of success in that, but it's not just about the trophy and the cutting the net and the people are standing and this, that's the moment where you actually solidify whether that's going to become a reality. And so I think helping this team, and I think the field note is really about this idea of saying, don't just have these lofty, far off things. The more that you can give them a little bit of teeth, a little bit of traction, and then say, what's it going to be like to get there? This is what it's going to take from this team. We're going to have to do this. It's going to look like this. It's going to feel like this. And the more that we start to make that actually kind of have a palpableness to it, which is why it says vividly throughout the throughout this field note, the more that that possibility becomes real to our team.
Okay, so let's talk briefly about the downside of this, or the possible downside.
Sure.
The embarrassment of practicing your acceptance speech, like practicing all the, and then you don't win. You don't even make it past the first round of the tournament. But, you know, we went through this funny ritual of pretending like we were going to be champions. What does it do to the psyche of a team when it's just like, it's a letdown, right? We practiced and it's not even happening at all.
Well, I think that's where some of the research does show that if it's just an end state visualization, then it actually becomes a discouragement. It can actually lead to also not only what you've just the failure of what happens, the emotional failure of that. What you're visualizing is all of the process of that, which is what we should be doing. And you talked about this just the other day around like, what's the process, not the end goal. And I'm not just a believer as, you know, Scott Adams, who I think has a lot of good things to say, but he, you know, his thing is systems, not the goals. Focus on the systems, right? And he's a hypnotist and all of the rest of that. And that's fine, but we are, as human beings, we are very goal-directed creatures. Right. Like that, we like to throw things and hit targets and we like to see things.
Right.
And I think you can have that. and you can actually make those crystallize. But when you're saying to become the kind of team that would achieve that, what would we have to look like? What kind of person would I have to be to achieve this? Let me head in that direction. And then I know as part of what I'm baking into that, that even if I don't get there, I'm going to be so much better an individual or so much better a team that then whatever the next challenge is, I'm going to be ready for that. And the next challenge is, and our thinking should be in that way so that we're actually not being negative in the sense of saying, well, we might not get there. Because look, you're not, if you want to be in the NBA or if you want to be a Broadway star, you have to be trying to be in the NBA or on Broadway, but only a tiny fraction of people that have the talent. Right. And I know we're going to go over a couple of minutes here, but you could have the talent, you could have the connections, you could have all of this, you could even have luck, and chances are you're still not going to make it to the NBA, right? Yeah. Or you're still not going to make it to Broadway, but you actually have to be going through all of the steps and processes. And I don't think there's any downside to saying, I want to become that kind of person, because whatever I then apply that to is going to be so much more potentially real for me. I'm going to land somewhere much better than where I am. Right. And as long as that's all factored in, then I don't think there's a way to really lose.
Right. So the fact that you're basically saying, I know that there's a 90% chance that I'm just kind of fooling myself, but establishing the process is actually more important than accomplishing the goal. Because the process can apply to anything else that I do.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and I, but you and have I do to be realistic, because if you tell yourself that, then you're like, I'm not going to win. I'm not going to really accomplish this. Right.
Well, and we have talked about, you know, in Seligman's research on learned optimism, yeah, that people that have an optimistic explanatory style do, and that can visualize these things, they outperform people in almost every category. The only thing where people with a pessimistic explanatory style excel is they're slightly more realistic. And so Seligman, and I think those conclusions still hold, which is if the results of what you're going to be doing could be financially catastrophic, emotionally catastrophic, you know, whatever it is, that even for your team, that then realism and a little bit of reality is helpful, right?
Right.
So other than that, keep that positive attitude. Say, well, this is where I'm going. Yeah. And I know if I weren't actually trying to picture it, there's no way I'm going to wander into it, right?
Right.
Very unlikely. Right. So I think that the check in the field note, and you as a leader, you're kind of the chief imagination officer here. You're planting a seed, and we've seen this with, you know, Kennedy on the moon landing. We've seen politicians who'll be like, "Well, what if we did this?" And you're like, "What are you talking about?" Like, nobody's ever said that out loud. But and at first you go, "Yeah, that's kind of crazy," and then later you're like, "Huh? Well, I guess what would that look like?"
Right.
And so the more that you can posit a vision of what this could look like, the much better chance it has of becoming a reality.
Right. Right. Okay. Fantastic. Thanks. We're a couple minutes over here, but totally worth it. And we'll talk again tomorrow.
Write and complain, you know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, Scott. Bye now.
See you, Mikey.